get off the sidelines. Time to get in the game.
Haole makahiki ho, this is Dr. Mike. Happy New Year. Holidays are over. Hopefully you didn't eat too much. Some people may have. And this is typically the time of year where people jump on these weight loss programs. And I see it a lot. This is when the gym memberships go up. We talk about this every single year. Everybody starts talking about their New Year's resolutions. And number one resolution that a lot of people make is to lose weight. And that's a great thing, I think, because, you know, we could all shed a little pounds. And we see the enrollments for different types of weight loss challenges skyrocket. And I talked about this in episodes back on, you should be planning out your year before January 1st starts. January 1st is coming on. Now we're in the midst of the New Year's resolution cycle. Now, here's some of the things that may happen is that you make this resolution, you get a gym membership, and you go to the gym, you start working out, and about January 20th, you stop going. And a lot of people have this issue. And, you know, we all fall flat on our faces, yeah. And there are reasons behind that, which I'm not going to get into this episode, by the way, but if you're part of my Wellness Academy, we talk about that. We talk about the identity that you need to change behind all of this, especially when you're making health changes. If you don't change your health identity, then, you know, all else is a very steep uphill climb. But in this episode, I wanted to go over the five things that you should be doing before you try to jump into these weight loss programs or weight loss challenges. Now, the reason why I'm doing this whole episode is because I see a lot of people do what I just talked about. They do the weight loss thing. That's their goal. But the reason why they're stopping by about, you know, 12, 15 days in, there's two major reasons. Is one, their health identity kicks in and pulls it back to where the body thinks it needs to be. And then the next one is they're not doing these things. They haven't prepared their body, or they're not keeping track of certain things that will aid the process of losing weight. Now, when we talk about losing weight, people mistake losing weight with losing fat. And those are two different things, because the majority of the weight that people lose when they go into weight loss programs is muscle weight and water weight. So they get dehydrated and they start losing muscle tissue. And that becomes a really big issue, because your muscle is a sink or a sponge for insulin, which is what you need to get blood glucose into the cells. So if you're going onto a program and you're just focusing on weight loss, then you're decreasing your levels of hydration, which puts a lot of stress on your cells and also your kidneys. And you're losing a lot of muscle mass, which eventually you become desensitized towards insulin, which is, you know, the beginning stages of metabolic syndrome and ultimately diabetes. So this episode, I wanted to divulge a lot of the things that we work with patients before they get into a weight loss program, which ultimately should be termed fat loss. So the first one is you got to know your blood sugar levels. And specifically, we want to know the rise and fall of blood sugar. A lot of people, you know, they may be doing like CGMs, which is cool, but I'm not necessarily a fan of, because of the whole Bluetooth constant connectivity. And also there's another side towards mitigating all that, which I'm not going to get into, but knowing your blood sugar is a really big thing. So if we can know what your blood sugar is, there's three things that I have patients check: is what's their fasting blood glucose, then what's their levels when they go up like an hour later after eating, and then 2 hours later. We want to see the rise and fall of your blood glucose levels. Because if your blood glucose are high already fasting and then it drops, or it rises really high after you're eating and then it drops really low a couple hours after eating, then we know that you're basically on this metabolic syndrome roller coaster ride where you're not producing enough insulin, then you're producing too much insulin, and then your blood sugar rises and falls inappropriately. So typically we aim for somewhere between like 72 to about 85 fasting, and then about a 20 to 25 point rise 1 hour fasting, And then we, about 2 hours, we want to see it drop back down to baseline. That's typically where we want to see. That's a comfortable level. If we have higher levels of fasting, there could be a bunch of things contributing to that. Stress is a really big one. Another one is we got to look at what you were eating like the night before or a couple hours before. If it's rising too much 1 hour after eating, then we know that we got to look at what you were eating. And that may be effective the order that you were eating certain things in. And there are different practices that you can put into place, like having fats and fiber to mitigate the rise of your blood glucose levels. You can just have lower amounts of carbohydrate intake. The type of carbohydrate intake, there's a myriad of things. Now, if your blood sugar is crashing about 2 hours after you're eating, so say your baseline was at 80, and then 2 hours after you're at like 70 or 65, we know that your body overcompensated with insulin. And short term, your body can handle that, but you leave that for years upon years, we got issues there because now the receptors for the insulin become desensitized and you're left with a whole other host of issues. This ties into the next thing is knowing your levels of inflammation, because if you have high blood glucose staying around for longer than it should, this is creating a lot of inflammation. Actually, if you have a spike in blood sugar, so if you're seeing your blood sugar rise more than 25, 30 points, some people are rising about 50 to 60 after they're eating, this is creating vasospasms and it's leading towards little pockets of inflammation within these arteries and arterioles. And you're creating inflammation in the lining of these arterioles. This is where the cholesterol story starts to come into play. Remember that cholesterol is not necessarily bad. Every single cell in your body needs cholesterol. That's one of the major constituents of cellular membranes. But when the body is inflamed and you're having these vasospasms because of high glucose levels, you start to stress the arterioles. Now you combine that with unmitigated amounts of homocysteine because you're lacking in B vitamins, which if you're a high carbohydrate diet, you're going to be burning through a lot of B vitamins. B complex is going to be down. Now you have a recipe for disaster because the walls of the artery starts becoming nicked. It's like going in and having these little razor blades and they're nicking the inside of the arteries and the arteries go into a spasm. The body then uses cholesterol as a band-aid. So you do this over time and the body has to keep laying down these band-aids. This is where arterial plaquing comes into play. But unfortunately, cholesterol has been vilified because whenever they've done autopsies on arterial plaquing, they find it to be cholesterol deposits and not necessarily thinking why the deposits are there, just really just blaming cholesterol. And this goes back to the whole research done by Ansel Keys and the lipid hypothesis. I'm not going to get into that. But if we don't control our blood sugar levels, we then put ourselves into states of inflammation. So that's one thing. Now, if you're in a highly inflamed state, your body has a very difficult time of burning fat for energy. One of the major reasons is that you're not delivering oxygen to the mitochondria. In an inflamed state, the body has a very difficult time of getting dissolved oxygen into the mitochondria. So if you don't have enough oxygen going to the mitochondria, you're not going to be burning enough energy. And it's very difficult for the body to switch over into what's called fatty acid oxidation, which is what you want. So a lot of people think that they're losing weight by decreasing caloric input, increasing caloric output, when in actuality, they're just losing a lot of water and burning through muscle. Because when your blood sugar starts to drop, which is what happens if you decrease the amount of caloric intake, then your body turns towards typically your stored proteins and it starts to make glucose out of these stored proteins. You start to break down muscle tissue to raise your blood glucose levels. So if we can train the body how to skip over that and get into fatty acid oxidation and burn fat for energy, and you got to figure, if you don't know this part, but your fat actually has more stored energy than proteins and carbohydrates. Actually almost double the amount of energy stored within that. So if the body can extract energy from fats, then you're going to actually make more energy from what's being stored. But if you have an erratic blood sugar and if you have high levels of inflammation, you also then will change the pH, which will change the way that insulin binds to the insulin receptors. So now your body does not switch over into burning fat for energy. It just burns or has more cravings for sugar. And this is a really big one that people go through is after they start mitigating the need for high sugary foods, then the body just goes into this basically starvation mode and starts breaking down its own tissue. And the tissue that it breaks down is protein, muscles. So we gotta know these things. What's your blood sugar? Know your levels of inflammation. The third thing that needs to happen before you try to lose weight or try to burn fat for energy, you gotta improve your sleep. Sleep is the time when your body actually releases the stored fat. You can read all the studies on this. This is phenomenal. But you actually breathe out the fat that you're burning. It comes out through carbon dioxide in your breath. Now, if you're not getting enough sleep, one, you're not going to get to that state where you're breathing out the carbon dioxide. And two, you don't allow your body to detoxify properly. Now, the other thing with sleep is that your circadian rhythms. If you know me, I'm really big on circadian rhythms. If your circadian rhythms are off, your hormonal profile will be off as well because your body doesn't know what time it is. And if it doesn't know what time, it doesn't know what to do when it's supposed to. Every single hormone in your body has a specific time that it's most active. Same thing for every single organ. Every single organ in your body has a specific time. And all the different healing practices throughout humanity have known this. So if you don't have your circadian rhythms balanced, that also means that you don't have your sleep dialed in. And your sleep patterns will change. Your circadian rhythms will change with age. It'll change with the change in seasons. It'll change when your levels of stress increase or decrease. But all in all, we got to improve our sleep. And I did a whole podcast with Sean Stevenson where he talks about sleep. And if you haven't read his book, it's a great book, all about sleep. And there are some things that we need to put into place in that. One is not eating too close to bed. Two, making your sleep environment cold. Three, making sure that we mitigate as much light as possible. This is a really big one. And I remember when I was in chiropractic school, my mentor, he showed us a study where the effects of light upon our hormonal system. And what they did in this study was they would shine a single photon of light at the back of a person's knee, the subject's knee, and they measured their cortisol response. And they showed that even just a single photon hitting the back of a person's knee was enough to elicit a cortisol response. And if your cortisol response is too high, so will your blood glucose. It follows. They're entwined. And if your cortisol is too high, blood glucose is too high, so is your insulin levels. If insulin levels are high, you do not burn fat for energy. So if you're stressed out, because you're not getting enough sleep or your circadian rhythms are off and your body doesn't know what time of the day it is, which in the morning time is when your cortisol is supposed to be higher. But if you're not getting enough sleep, then typically what happens is initially your cortisol levels will be higher. Then it'll start to dip. And for some people, their cortisol levels may actually reverse what we call your cortisol curve. It may reverse to where your cortisol levels are lower in the morning and higher in the evening. So now you just can't get to bed. And this is where we see a lot of cases of insomnia. So we got to dial in our sleep. And if you don't have a health tracker like Oura Ring, that's the other thing that we should be doing is investing in a health tracker, which it'll help with a couple things. One is your sleep tracking. It's really great at telling you where you are within like deep sleep, REM, which is your restorative stages of sleep. It'll show you the length of sleep. It'll show you if you had any restlessness, all kinds of stuff that will be within the app. It'll also help you to track HRV. Now, it's not as accurate as a chest strap monitor, in my opinion, but it's better than nothing. It'll give you some insight into your HRV. It'll also track your steps per day. And that's one of the things that if you're going to be doing something, you got to be doing activity. That's going to be you know, a big thing towards burning fat for energy is low impact, what we call zone two exercising, or doing what we call exercise snacking, where you're just doing something throughout the day at small intervals. But a health tracker is going to help you to get an insight into your body, just like a dashboard on your car, or if you're operating some type of vehicle, it has a dashboard to show you the insights. What's your mileage? How fast are you going? Do you need to change your oil? Do you need to put more fluids in? Your dashboard tells you that. And a lot of times we just go by our symptoms as our dashboard, which is the worst thing, because symptoms are the last thing to arise and the first thing to go away. So it doesn't really give you an insight and story onto what's going on in your body. A health tracker will dive a little bit deeper. Obviously, it's not as deep as getting like lab testing or some other type of biometric testing, but it at least gives you an insight, especially the sleep part. That's what I like stuff like the Oura Ring. You know, there's other stuff like Whoop, Fitbit, Apple Watch. There's all kinds of stuff on there. Find one that you like, whatever fits into your budget, and see what types of information that it may give you and whatever you need. But investing in the health tracker, that's like the fourth thing that we should be doing. All right, and the fifth one is you got to create a system to follow and to help keep you accountable. Accountability is the biggest thing, because that's why you fall off after about 12 to 15 days, is your level of accountability. And that often goes back to not having a strong enough reason for doing the weight loss program or whatever thing that you're going to be doing. You just didn't have a high level of the reason why you're going to be doing it. And also you never held yourself accountable, or never asked to be held accountable, or don't like to be accountable to whatever thing that you're doing. And that's a lot of people. I've got a lot of messages popping up here. Having a system to follow just makes things easier. And that's why a lot of people go on these like weight loss diets and all that kind of stuff, which is great, because you get a system to follow. It just takes the brain work and the guesswork out of doing what you need to do. And it holds you accountable, because then it'll show you, did you do this on this day? And you check it off, right? And that's another thing, is as you're going through this, you need to create new habits. You need to break old ones. And that ties back into the health identity. That if you don't change the health identity, then once you reach that 20-day mark, that health identity will tell you, hey, what you're doing, that's not us. And you'll find excuses to not continue, or some type of crisis or chaos will start to happen. And now the thing that you set out to do doesn't necessarily become priority. And this is for everybody. I've gone through this. I still go through this a lot. But if you don't have a system to jump through all of those hoops and jump over those hurdles to combat the obstacles that you're going to face, then you pretty much give up and you get to stay exactly where you are, you know. And that's why I've created a lot of my programs. And the one that we're doing right now, as you listen to this, is called the Total Slim Down. The course used to be called the Four Pillars of Weight Loss. And there were a bunch of things that we rearranged and restructured into a system that is geared towards, and let me talk about what slim down really means. It sounds cool, sounds like a weight loss thing, but slim down means to support longevity through improving your metabolic flexibility. That's the whole goal. That's what SLIM stands for, is supporting longevity by improving your metabolic flexibility. That's the whole goal of what we're trying to do with all of health, is that if we can get your body to burn both fat and sugar for energy, that supports longevity. That's one of the core principles of longevity, because that will mitigate all the things that we just talked about. That'll mitigate blood sugar fluctuations. That'll mitigate inflammation. You balance out your circadian rhythms. You utilize nutrients properly. You educate the body onto how to deal with times of feast than with times of famine, which is what we were accustomed to. And it creates a system to where you can help rewrite your health identity surrounding weight or fat or body image or whatever. That's what we do within the course. And we give you all the tools that you need to really look at what's important in my body in regards to weight loss, fat loss. What's the measurables that we should be looking at? And clue number one, it ain't weight, because weight is a poor biometric. Because like I said, most people in weight loss, they're losing water and muscle. We want to look at the intricacies. We want to make sure that your body is running correctly so that you're not sacrificing health over body image. And that's what I've seen a lot of people get into trouble with, right? So if you want to learn more about that, and this is something that you are very interested in, you can just go over to my website, www.tripleplayperformance.com/slimdown. You'll be able to watch a recorded webinar that goes over some of the things that I've been talking about. It'll go over what we're going to be doing in the course. And if this is for you, just go ahead and enroll. And it'll be like I'm walking you through this entire program. Again, www.tripleplayperformance.com/slimdown. All right, see you on the other side.
If you enjoy this podcast, leave us a 5-star review. Connect with me on Instagram at tripleplaydoc. Stay tuned for more episodes. Tell your friends, tell your family, tell the entire world. Till the next episode, be well and aloha.